City Lights is a community of faith in Jesus, seeking to equip people to exalt Him and extend His kingdom. This message is from our study through the Gospel of John called Believe, Jesus Changes Everything. If you are encouraged and challenged by this message, please share it with someone, post it on social media, or let us know by leaving feedback on our iTunes podcast.
They say that the Chinese created fireworks, which I'm not sure about. I've had my fair share of a fire. I would love to show the burning bush picture up here. I love fire, but I also am really bad at fire. I've almost burned myself and others several times. I happened to put too much lighter fluid one time on a charcoal grill, just learning. I'm just trying to get on YouTube and learn how to be an adult and do adulting well. And my mother-in-law was over, and I hit her in the face with a fireball. I put too much something in it. I didn't know what to do. And the fire just exploded, and some of her right eyebrow just got singed off. It was pretty bad. I've started grease fires before. This picture right here, that's me. That's my backyard. And that's a big fire. That right there, that fire right there is all fire. And I'm not good at fires. A lot of times if you come over to my house for a bonfire, it takes me a long time to get the thing started. I can't get the right logs and the right wood and all that stuff. This one caught pretty easy. This is a bush that I pulled out of my side yard, and I put it there, and lo and behold, that's my face is really, because I bet you the air around my face is about 115 degrees. That's how hot it is. And that flame obviously goes well out of the picture, but I love fire, but I have a love-hate relationship. There are some fires that start very easily for me, and you guys have also experienced fires that are very difficult to start. Fire is interesting because the nature of fire is that it's very subject to conditions, right? Fire can be something that you hear on the news from California that fires can get started without anybody giving any effort at all. And lo and behold, one twig leads to a branch and a branch leads to a tree, and then all of a sudden you have this huge forest that's caught on fire. But I don't know if you've ever been like me. I'm like the guy that doesn't know what he's doing with fire. I've been out on camping experiences and for just 20 minutes you're just trying to get this fire. You literally have you've got kerosene, you've got matches, you've got everything at your disposal, all the tools that modern history and God has provided. You can't get the daggum thing to start, right? Because fire is very subject to conditions. Fire wants to burn everything. It's all-consuming. It's very contagious. It can catch things. You could get a house caught on fire. God forbid that your house would catch on fire, and that stuff happens, and it's a horrible accident. It leads a lot of damage, and it happens quickly. But then sometimes fire is very, very difficult to get started. And this is really what we see as we look at John chapter 4 is going on in Jesus' ministry. There are places, there are conditions, there are heart postures that fire, and by fire, I mean the revival of the heart, the acceptance of the kingdom, is very contagious in certain areas. There are certain people he talks to, there are certain places he goes that all he has to do is say that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. He doesn't even have to do miracles. He doesn't even have to preach with this great wisdom. He doesn't have to pull all the rabbits out of the hat. He just has to say kingdom, and all of a sudden, people begin to believe, right? So this is where we are in John chapter 4. This is an example of this, okay? He's on the way to Galilee, his hometown. He's going to go preach and start the fire, start the kingdom, start the movement, okay? He started with just miracles, and he's given a message. He's had a few meetings, but now he's looking at a movement. And he wants to bring along people. He said, come on, the kingdom's not just for me, the kingdom's for you. Come follow me. This is the invitation. And depending on where he's at, it's interesting, as he goes to Galilee, he cuts through Samaria. And we've been talking about two instances in which he had a meeting with Nicodemus, and then Chris preached a few weeks ago on his meeting with the woman at the well. Two different people, two different types of lumber, wood, or kindling, so to speak. One of them catches, the other one doesn't. The same is true of cities. The name of this sermon I want to call is The Tale of Two Cities, because the first city or the first town he visits is Samaria. Verse 39, many Samaritans from the town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. And she said, he told me all that I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them. So one person in an intimate one-on-one conversation goes back into her town, shares the testimony, And now what was known only by a few is beginning to be known by many. The ember which was burning caught fire in light of Jesus. The context was right. It was easy to catch. It was a simple conversation. There was no miracles. There was no kind of water to wine, walking on the waves kind of thing. It's just a moment, and she catches fire. And then that fire doesn't need any more miracles. It's just now it's not even a miracle or Jesus himself. It's just the testimony of what Jesus did. And the town kind of erupts. So it says they invited him. They wanted him to stay. He did. He agreed to do so, kind of like fire would do, right? And he stayed there 2 days. And many more began to catch fire. Many more believed because of his words. So the fire begins to grow. It gets bigger. And they said to the woman, it is no longer because of what you said. It's not even because just the heat of that branch that you were burning that attracted us. We actually had an encounter ourselves with the fire, and we are catching fire as well. We're believing. We have believed for ourselves. It's a first-hand experience. It's not a third-hand experience. It's not my dad is, you know, a pastor or my uncle is a worship minister. I had the encounter with him. And we heard for ourselves, and we know now that what you said is true. We've come to the same conclusion. Fire is hot, and Jesus is the Savior of the world. We get everything. We believe everything that he has to say. We treat him as king. He's not just a prophet. He's not just a nice guy. He's not just somebody that we should respect and fear. He is somebody to know and somebody to profess lordship. He is the one we've been waiting for. Everything that we do in our waiting, in our working, in our raising of families, it's all asking that one question, is there a God and is he interacting with me? And they said, when you came back with that story, you answered that question for me. Yes, this is the Messiah. We have found him. We have tasted. We have seen. It is true. He is the Messiah. So what you see there is that an ember begins to meet. And there are certain, you guys know, as you work with Caleb Riddle, I should have had and just give a testimony because he's like starts fires without wood. I don't know what he does. I can't start a fire if I had Lowe's and Home Improvement and everything in there and he could start a fire out of that chair right there. I don't know. He'd blow on it. I don't know what he'd do. But there are certain fires that are hard to start and certain ones that are easy. But there's a process. If you, like I would go into my woods, like I've got woods next door because I'm too cheap to pay for the lumber. And I get logs out of there and sticks and, you know, there's different levels, little pieces of cotton will start you up and you'll get Vaseline on there, they say, you know, and I'll build the fire up. But for the darndest, I could start out of that one bush. I started a huge flame. For the next like 6 or 7 times, I couldn't start this fire because I found out it's not that the wood wasn't too dry, but it was too like fungusy or something, too much fungus on it. And there are certain fires you can't start, but there are certain fires. Like I would even say what I've learned in the last year of getting a bonfire, like threw that one away and built one out of concrete. Starting fires is less about, you know, the size of the wood that you have. It's more about the quality of the wood that you have. It's like if you had one little tiny woman at the well, one little ember that could really catch fire, and all you don't need that big log, and you don't need this huge branch that, you know, that could be a fuel log, so to speak. You just need a little ember. That's all you need. And this is what Jesus is doing. He's walking, and he's going from miracle to message and message to meeting and meeting into a movement, but he's not looking for the biggest guy. He's looking for the humblest person who would catch fire, who would be, as Matthew 5 says, poor in spirit enough to receive Jesus as king. Not so much in Galilee. His own hometown, much no less. The ones that should have known him, the ones that should have had the most access to the fire, they can't catch fire. Something about the wood that they have, something about the fungus inside of them, something about the temperament or the moisture or whatever it is, they can't catch fire. And so Galilee, it says, verse 43, after the 2 days he departed for Galilee, it says for Jesus himself had testified. So he already knew what was in Galilee before he went there. But yet, you know, prophetically and following along with what his father said, he went into the heart of darkness, chose into this community he knew that would mostly reject him. He would go to his people first, the Jews first, and then the Gentiles. That's what the word of the father said. And he goes in knowing. He already knows what kind of fire or what kind of wood this is. He says, this is a place where they don't honor prophets, much less me. For Jesus himself had testified that a prophet had no honor in his own hometown. So when he came into Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. Now here's the key. So we're just it's interesting because it's saying that basically they want him, but they don't want him. Right? They're welcoming him, but at the same time they're doing this. They're rejecting him, but they're welcoming at the same time. I don't know if you ever felt like that in a relationship. Maybe this is how you can empathize with what's going on. But Jesus is saying, I'm sensing they welcome me, but yet they have an arm. They have a defense mechanism there. And here's why. This is what it says. Galileans welcome him, having what? Seen all that he had done in Jerusalem at the feast. This was the same town, the same Galilee, where the wedding of Cana, Jesus had changed water into wine. They all marveled at what happened, and they responded to what happened. They talked about what happened, but yet they still reject him. They don't consider him a prophet. They don't honor him. And there's this interesting thing that I think we can relate to, too, in churches of like, I want what God can do, but I don't want God. There's this kind of thing that goes on in Galilee, which makes up the culture. And the culture is that there's no honor for him. Isn't that Mary's boy? Isn't that just David's son, the little carpenter boy? He surely couldn't be the Messiah, right? There's this entitlement that I know him, this familiarity that's almost ruining their relationship, that they can't see what's right in front of them. They can't see that he's the Messiah. So this person that's in Samaria who shouldn't know who he is, who's a woman who's you know, probably illiterate, you know, is not biblically sound, doesn't have any type of history, doesn't know any context of Jesus, hears a little bit of what he would have to say and responds and believes. Whereas over here in Galilee, where they should have known, they had massive amounts of information, they had seen the greatest miracles, and yet they still did not believe. So this is what I want to know. Why are some fires hard to get started and some fires hard to stop? What is it about the woman? What happens at the well that the woman gets access to something that the people in Galilee didn't have access? How did a woman that's never been educated before and is of ill repute, who, if purity is what allows us to see God, is not pure? What is the deal? How does this woman get access to something that Nicodemus can't get access to, that the Galileans can't get access to? If you read it, and Chris explained it last time when he preached on this, this is the first time that anybody can see this, right? Her eyes are open, and she literally professes, this is the Messiah, this is the Savior. So in other words, all these people who should have known who he was and lived next to him, they didn't believe, but yet she is the first one to have access to this truth. Truth is available. Anybody can see it. Anybody can catch a hold of this fire. But she's the one who sees it. She actually, it's interesting if you look at it, is the first worshiper. I mean, you've got John the Baptist, and he obviously understands that he's the Messiah. He's, you know, you've got the disciples that are following him, which are still kind of a wait and see. You know, like they're following him. They don't really even get it, even towards the end. But somehow this woman, who has nothing about her that represents wisdom, and she's not even a Jew, and Jesus wasn't even sent, and somehow this woman has access to something that nobody else can see. She is the first worshiper. She's the first, you know, you got these, you know, you got the lady that's been at the church, the 75th Baptist Church, and she's been there for 80 years. She's the first worshiper. She's the first one on Sundays. This is her. She's the one that gets it. She's the first one. When she starts talking to Jesus about worship, what she doesn't know is she's going to get ambushed. And they start to talk about worshiping in spirit and truth. What Jesus knows and she doesn't know is that she's about to be the first worshiper of spirit and truth. She's about to be the first one that has access to actual worship. Nicodemus, the Galileans, the Jews, all these people who know so much stuff and have seen so many miracles can't see what she sees. What happens to her? And this is what she says. This is the insight of what we know happened to this woman. No miracles, no water, no wine. Okay, verse 39, going backwards. This is what she, remember what she said when she came in the town. Many Samaritans from that town believed him because of the woman's testimony. This is what she says happened to her. This is the only way she can explain. I was sitting there. All I remember is I asked this guy this guy asked me for some water. We started talking about all this religious stuff, and he knew a lot of stuff. I mean, he preached with authority. He knew all this stuff. He prophesied some stuff. He saw some things about my life that I never told him. Okay? So there's lots of things that she could attribute to why she believed. But this is what lingers with her. This is what her soul, this is what resonates in her heart. This is what she says, as plain as day. He told me all that I ever did. He told me all that I ever did. She doesn't come running into the town saying, this guy is a miracle worker. He changed the water into wine. He named Fred and Todd and Billy and Bob and all the people that I'd been with before. Like, she doesn't say any of that. She says, he saw my soul. That's what she's saying here. She said, I walked away from him and I felt seen and I felt known. And here's what's most important. I walked away from him and I knew that he knew everything about me, but yet still he loved me. That's what the worship of spirit and truth is. The worship of spirit and truth is an encounter. It's coming to, let's get this quote on the screen. This is a great quote for us to bounce off of. It's a guy, I'll remember it once it's up there. That's Jesus. That's a good one. Tim Keller. I might want to hang on to that one. Pretty smart guy. Tim Keller. He says everybody in here is asking this question. Woman at the well, and even the Pharisees are asking this question. Some of us are more open about this question. Some of us are more cognizant that this is what we're asking. But this is the question of human beings. To be loved. This is the first question. Am I loved? To be loved but not known is comforting yet superficial. Okay? So the religious spirit, which I believe that this is what this whole book is trying to cut out. Big ladder. Pharisees have this ladder. But yet these people that don't have ladders are getting it. The ladder means I can get to God by my works. And the religious person says, I know that if I were known, if you really knew me, that I'm impure on the inside. So instead of being known and loved, this is what I do. I put up a front so that you can love me, but you don't really know me. Okay? But this is what Tim Keller says. This is the religious side of things. Some people do this. They say to be loved and to be not known is to be comforting but superficial. In other words, the pain of being known but not loved is so hard, I'd rather be fake with you. I'd rather put up a mask. I'd rather put up a religious thing. To be known and not loved is why the religious people and why we do all the faking. Because the pain of being deeply seen, deeply noticed, deeply recognized, and deeply rejecting is so deeply and profoundly hurtful. It's the greatest fear. It's why public speaking is the, you know, number one fear thing, above death, so Jerry Seinfeld says, is because we don't want to be known and rejected. But this is what the love of God looks like. This is what an encounter with God would look like. That the Son of God would take the time to sit at the well with you, to talk with you face to face, not through a book, not through a study to know about something, not by showing you a magic trick, so you could go, yeah, you did this thing. He understands the Son of Man would sit at the well for us because he understands that the deepest longing of our soul is that he would peer deeply inside of us and say, I know every man that you've ever been with. I know your deepest, darkest sin. I know how fearful you are of your dreams not coming true. I know the secret thoughts that you have that you're afraid to confess, but yet I still love you. In the deepest understanding that God, Jesus communicated to this woman through this conversation. She comes back and she confesses it. He knew everything that I did. But yet he still offered me water. He still offered me living water. What kind of a God is this? What kind of a religion is this? What kind of a system is this? That the one who has it all, the one who owns it all, the rich one, the one that's never sinned, the one that's righteous, the one that's the king would sit with me, the lowest, the worst, the most unintelligent, and know everything that I've ever done. Every bad intention, not just my actions, but my thoughts. And he would look into me and say, but yet still I love you. This is a powerful moment for a human being. But the Galileans are much different. They're the first, right? They're the religious side. Let's look at this quote from, it's from Matthew, but it quotes Isaiah. We'll go backwards now to the quote that I had up first from Jesus. This is what he says of the religious of the day and religious now. He says, religion is hypocrisy. It's not being known so that you can be loved. It's hiding so that you can be loved. Phariseeism isn't like a historical term. It's a way of life. It's preeminent. It's what we all do. We run. We hide so that we would be loved. And it says, you're a hypocrite when we do this. We're hypocrites when we do this. It says, Isaiah prophesies about Galilee, and it prophesies about Nicodemus, and it prophesies about all these people. You've been prophesied correctly about you. Next one. It says, these people honor me with their lips. This is where we're at, right? They welcomed him. They honor him with their lips, but yet, how do you honor somebody without honoring them? It says they welcomed him, but they don't welcome him. How do you honor somebody without honoring them? They welcome them with their lips because of his works, because he performed miracles, because of what he can do, because he's going to get me somewhere, because he's famous and he's popular, right? It's why we're much more ready to honor God with our lips inside a church versus out, is because in the culture of religion, I'm going to get somewhere by honoring him. So I'm going to honor him. But where's my heart? It's not there. It's not real. It's not vulnerable. It's not actually saying anything. My heart is hidden. My heart is removed. My heart is cold. My heart is blocked off. That's what religion is. It's saying I would rather be not known and loved than deeply known and risk rejection. He says, these people, they honor me with their hearts, but their hearts are far from, or their lips, their hearts are far from me. Next one. They worship me in vain. They teach the doctrine that and the precepts of men. This is a man. This is not about heaven. This is about men. This is about the way of the world. People, everybody celebrates religion. Everybody has a religion. It's bringing that type of hiding from the world and just dressing it up as the church. That's what religion is. And so here's a quick story to kind of explain and illustrate what I'm saying. You guys know who T.D. Jakes is. Great preacher, right? He gets up there, man. I wish I was T.D. Jakes. He's just awesome. And so, he's sweating, and the organ is, wah, wah, I said, wah, wah. Like, love it. And so he's got a great following. He's on television, all these things. Interesting story. He was sharing a testimony one time I heard, and he said, big moment for me in ministry, going from servant into sonship as a minister. He said, I want to encourage ministers out there. He said, there was a time I can remember when I, on like a Friday night revival, was preaching to 8,000 people, okay? They welcomed me. They honored me, right? And it was a great night. And there were people saved and people were set free and all these things. This great ministry was happening. And there was such a love. There's a line out the door to talk to T.D. Jakes, like, just touch my sock, then my feet would be, they want to talk to the guy. They want to talk to T.D. Jakes. And he said, but what was so hard for me and powerful for me that I learned that weekend is that on Friday I preached to 10,000. The Saturday after, my grandmother died, who is a spiritual just covering and friend of mine. And on Sunday, I saw no more than 120 people at this funeral with me. Most of us are like, well, 120 friends, that's a pretty good turnout. But the point was this, is that there are many people who will love you for your gift, but they don't love you. There are many people who will love you for the facade that you put up, the fake kind of act and dance that you do, but the reality is they don't see you, and if they did, they don't love you. But you know who does? The one at the well. The one at the well. The one at the well, the only one that will love your soul, sees deeply into you, you're in my heart. And he doesn't just love what we do. He doesn't just love what the way we sing and then we dance. He doesn't just love us on our good days. He loves us in our dark days and our hard days. It was actually, it reminded me this week, that it was when he cut covenant with Abraham. Abraham was completely asleep. That while Abraham was doing nothing, God was loving him. Greatest moment of all of history, when God breaks the first covenant with human beings were asleep. This is the nature of God's love. It's not because of what you do, it's because of who he is, that we are deeply, profoundly known and deeply and profoundly loved. And this is the nature of Galilee. Why do some logs burn and others don't? Because Galilee wanted to be loved without being known. Because Galilee wanted to honor God with its lips, but keep its heart removed. But this woman, she has no guard up. She has no walls up. She sits at the well, and Jesus begins to peel back the layers. She starts talking politics with him and starts talking about religion with him and starts talking about what this prophet says and this prophet. And what do you think about this? And you know what Jesus says? He says, I don't want to know anything about what you know or the knowledge or what you can say. I want to know who you are. Because the biggest thing that you need as a spirit and truth worshiper, and I do believe that there's anything we can get out of this passage right here, is us answering the question, how to become a spirit and truth worshiper? How do we fulfill when Jesus came to earth, paid a great price for us, the temple was shaken and the curtain was torn so that we could go into the Holy of Holies and worship face to face with him? You know how big of a deal that is religiously? That all throughout the Old Testament, we're making sacrifices and people are putting little bells on their feet so that if they case and they died in the presence, they got to get yanked out. There's all these stipulations and regulations. You could read Leviticus and fall asleep six times before you ever read through it. There's so much stuff in there about how I'm going to get to God. And Jesus sits with the woman in the well and says, guess what? All that stuff is gone and you can meet with me face to face. And society, and she would say, but I haven't done anything. I don't have any offering. I don't have any perfect, unblemished land. I don't have anything to give to you. And Jesus says, that's okay. I'll bring the lamb. I'll bring the offering. How did the woman at the well become the first worshiper in spirit and truth? Because she had a love encounter. What's the quote that I have up there? If I could read it, that would be great. Or I can get it from my iPad if it's not. Let's go backwards just one. iPads will lock up at you on times. This is what I'm trying to say. The woman at the well was not converted. by miracles or wisdom. It actually says in 1 Corinthians that, you know, Paul dumbs down his wisdom because he realized what? People aren't converted by wisdom. The Jews look for a sign. The Greeks look for wisdom. Wisdom and signs don't convert people. The woman didn't have any signs. She didn't have any wisdom. They didn't even have a conversation. She knew 1 millisecond of what the Pharisees knew. But yet still she worshiped. Still she went back and offered a testimony that was pure enough to catch fire. And they welcomed him in. And they encountered, based on her testimony, it says, we knew for ourselves. What was it that experienced? What was it that happened in Samaria that never happened in Galilee? Well, it was offered, the same offering was there. It was the same fire, the same heat, the same burning. But yet the wood was different. And the wood leads to this. It wasn't the miracles that ultimately the Galileans needed. It wasn't wisdom. It was the power and the love of God. It is the encounter with the living God. Face-to-face worship. That's what he's come for. He's come to tear the veil down. And when he gets into a conversation about worship with her, the reason why she's surprised is because he goes right to talking about her husbands. But guess what? He's doing it on purpose because that's where worship happens. It doesn't happen from your lips. It happens from here. Corinthians is talking all about this as well. We're not worshiping because our bodies are burned alive or because we speak in great tongues of angels. This is where we're worshiping. When a human heart, the real heart, risks and comes out of covering, comes out of shame and risks into being known fully by God and realizes this beautiful power of truth, that the one who made it all, the one that created us, the one that knows us most deeply, loves us so purely. He's unshaken in his love for us. And this is the news that sets her on fire. This is the news that the first revival begins. This is the first time that we see a private movement becoming public. And it begins to spread and it begins to engage. And we ask ourselves, why does it happen here? You know, like if we were church planters, we'd all want to go over there and start a blog and figure out, well, how did it work? And it doesn't have anything to do with blogs. It doesn't have anything to do with, you know, statistics or figuring out how to do it the right way. It's real simple. It's that the woman encountered the living God. She didn't hear about him. I think in the South so much, we are like the Galileans. Because we think, well, there's a familiarity with Jesus that makes it hard for us to honor him. That we grew up, you know, we just grew up with Jesus. He's our homeboy. And you know Jesus. He's at the camp. And I've been in church. I grew up in church. I'm a church weed or church rat or whatever that is. And we're at the church all the time. And, you know, my uncle's a pastor. And all we just start thinking about. And these are, if we really thought about it, this is really why we think that we know God. But what he's saying is it's very possible that things about God are coming out of your mouth. But he says, get away from me. I never knew you. Eternal life is this, that you would know me. That no, gnosko, that's not like a I know multiple choice. There's levels of it. Like I know for a true or false answer. I know for a multiple choice answer. I know enough about it that I'm saturated. I could write an essay. But knowing is about marriage. It's about marriage. It's about relationship. This revival does not start from miracles. It starts from marriage. It starts from, let me ask you this question. If you're married, raise your hand. Are you married in the room? Anybody married? How did you know that you should trust that spouse enough to marry them? Okay? We all had that decision, right? Some of us hear from the Lord, or some of us just knew, or I don't know what it is. You just know and you're knower, okay? Did you get a resume out? Did you ask a lot of people? Did you ask for them to manifest something that would prove their love or something like that? You know, most of us, it's not a rationalized idea. It's not a head decision. The same way that we make decisions to trust and give our lives away, the most important choice that we can make, the same reasons and the same posture that we take in choosing our wife, this is the posture that he shows us to worship him. We don't need facts. We don't need evidence. We just need to see and respond. We need to be seen and to be loved, to be loved and to love him in return. That's what it looks like to start a revival. It's not more miracles. It's not more, you know, sound doctrine. It's not more studying and more teaching. All these things are important. But what good are all these things if it doesn't direct us to the one? To Jesus, the face-to-face worship. This is what spirit and truth worship, that the curtain was torn. There's no more walls. And now I'm completely engaged with him. It's heart to heart, deep to deep, spirit to spirit. Silly youth illustration. If you're at, me and Chris have been talking about this, but if you're at, what's a good restaurant? We went to Lou's Chinese Bistro. Man, I love me some Lou's, man. I used to work there, got some orange peel beef. Let me tell you, if you're a Lou's person, you just think, Oliver, I've been there so many times, and I won't try anything else because I'm stuck on this one dish. I triple dog dare you to check out a spicy seafood noodle soup, and you'll enjoy it. I don't want to drum it up too much, but it's a great dish. Spicy seafood noodle soup, you know, I write it down. It'd be good. Every time I go there, it's so good. There's so much stuff to look at. I was at the last time, it was Kyra's birthday. It was like, we got the, luckily, when you get the kind of, you get a two for one when you get to have a, what's it called, an appetizer, you know, so you get to try something as well. The ahi tuna is pretty money, and, you know, you get a chicken lettuce wrap. Stirring myself up right now, come to speak of it. But I ended up with an orange peel beef, but some days, you know, I might go for a coconut shrimp. I might do a loose spicy chicken. I might do one of these things. And it's just so hard to decide. There's so many things on the menu. This is what has been striking me lately. If I sit down on this, and I want to talk specifically on this issue of reading God's word. If I sit down and read this menu, and then I close it up and take the napkin out and get off, and I don't order a meal, like, what's the point of the menu? You see what I'm tracking with here? Like, the deal, the whole purpose for this is not to have an encounter with words on a page. It's to have an encounter with the living God. So I don't need to come away from this time with more facts. I need to come away from this time with more relationship. Not to think better, but to draw nearer to him. That's what the goal of this whole thing is. And so I remember distinctly, I remember the Lord rebuked me. I was just starting off with youth ministry, and I thought to myself, I'd always had a certain quiet time that I'd always read, and I was reading through, I think it was like Romans or something like that, and we wanted to do this youth thing where we started up this series on 1 John. I really wanted students to know about the love of God and that God is love and these things, and so I thought to myself, you know, let's combine the two things, right? Let's put, you know, let's kill two birds with one stone, let's study 1 John and kind of study for the sermon and receive from him at the same time. It's like, you know, let me enjoy the thing and then I'll teach it as well. And the Lord stopped me after a few weeks. He said, listen, like, you can't approach this thing so that you can teach. The purpose of this is not to teach. The purpose of this is so that you can know me. And when you go ahead and try and make this thing, and this is, you're not youth pastors, so it doesn't really affect you, but I think you get the point. Hopefully it transitioned and it translates to you in your life. But if you make this thing about what I can teach, or what I can know, you've missed the purpose altogether. And so he said very distinctly to me, I want you to read Romans for you, and then you can read 1 John for them. Because this thing is not a menu, it's a meal. You're meant to partake. You're meant to have an experience. You're meant to encounter. You're meant to be directed towards the one that knows you, deeply knows you, and deeply loves you. This is the reality. We don't really have head problems. We're much smarter, right? In our modernized society, we know much more than her. We don't have miracle problems. We have love problems. We don't believe that we're loved. The reason why we struggle, the reason why we toil, the reason why we feel oppressed, the reason why we get stuck and we seem like we can't move beyond certain things, it's not because we don't know enough. It's because we don't understand his love for us. It's in the deepest, darkest places. Sometimes in our darkest moments that God comes and collects us and says, I love you. I deeply know you and I deeply love you. So here's the tale of two cities, right? That's the name of the sermon. What makes one city catch fire where the other one doesn't? It's the issue of a love encounter. It's not knowing more, it's drawing nearer. That somehow, because of the circumstance, because of where she was at, because of her day, or, you know, ultimately because of the Lord's sovereignty, that he would befound the wise with a foolish person, Corinthians would say, and stick the silliest, like, most confused, hurt, bottom of the ladder type of person, and stick them right next to Jesus and catch them straight on fire to show everybody else what the kingdom is like. We're not missing miracles, and we're not missing wisdom. We're missing his face, his presence. And when we seek his hand and not his face, we ask the Lord to do things for us. We honor him with our lips, but our hearts are far from him. There's a way that you could honor President Obama if he were to come in the room, right? You could say great things about him, give him a great spot to sit and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you don't know him. And Jesus is not asking just for the honor. That's where we start, for sure. Don't get me wrong. There needs to be an honor. Honor, if you look it up, it's like almost translated to meaning like silver or precious metal. It's a sense of value. It's like, if you talk, I'm listening because I honor you. I'm going to honor you because you know more than me. I'm going to honor you because you have more experience than me. Or I'm going to honor you because I'm obedient to honor you and you're over me as a boss. That's what honor means. For sure, that's the front door. And with Jesus, we do want to practice honor. We do want to give him the highest seat in our life. We do want to treat him as king, not just as father, okay? So there is this sense of we want to learn from what the Galileans don't or do in the sense that we do want to honor him with our lips. But at the end of the day, he's not asking for the honor we give to a president. He's asking the honor we give to a father. He's asking for the honor that we would give to a husband, that you would see the deepest, darkest spots in my heart. And that's what I believe. I believe he's waiting for us at the well. If you're asking for yourself, how can my life catch fire? Why is my life not as on fire as it once was? I would point directly back to this question at the well. What is the conversation we have with him at the well? That private conversation where no one is around, where the church isn't supporting, stirring, and sending us. And we go home and it's just you and me, or just you and the Lord, excuse me. It's just you alone. It's those prayers, it's those conversations that are the bedrock of true fire. True fire catches not from the biggest log, it's not from the most prominent. He could have set the biggest statue on fire and say, look, I just set it on fire, but he doesn't work that way. Same way he doesn't work in my backyard, unfortunately. He can take the smallest twiglet, but if it's dry, it will catch. And this is the nature. If we could boil it all down, what is revival? Revival is not a magic show, it's a relationship. Revival isn't a miracle, it's a marriage. By the same way that we would choose a spouse and say, I don't know what I know, but I know that I'm being drawn to you. It's Nicholas Sparks. You guys know Nicholas Sparks when Ryan Gosling. She's like, how come you're talking to me? And he's like, I'm just being drawn to you. This is a great line, but this is our heart, that we're drawn to him. We seek desperately to be known and to be loved. And this is the one that knows us. He knows us deeply and he loves us still. I pray for your week. As we pray, we just close this time. I bless everyone in this room with a courage that even I think I've heard before that even the Latin basis for that is heart, that we would be wholehearted and courageous to not settle to be unknown and fake loved. But that we would be like the woman at the well, that we would deeply entrust our heart, that we would deeply entrust our soul, knowing that he's the one that holds us. He's the one that loves us. He's the one that loved us before we loved him. It's not that we loved him, it's that he loved us first. And I ask that you would do this ministry for us, the same that you did at the woman of the well, that we would not be like the Galileans, honoring with our mouth but not with our hearts. That you would do for us the ministry that needs to get done, not on the altars of society, but the altar of our heart. That's what you would do, that you would change us, that you would make us new, that you would solve our love problem. We've seen enough miracles and we've seen enough wisdom. We're ready to be committed. We're ready to be drawn to you. We love you. We make much of you. We honor you. We don't just seek your hand, we seek your face. We want to know you. Same way that you said eternal life is to know you, we want to know you. Bless you. Bless your name, Jesus. Amen.